Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that recognizes greatness, even if each of us might have a different view on just what that particular quality means. We are, though, united when it comes to recognizing the strength of Citizen Kane, the 1941 film directed by Orson Welles that is widely considered to be one, if not the greatest film ever made. Kane is the focus of Mank, the latest film directed by David Fincher, and it is Fincher's work that we will be discussing first, though we can hardly do so without commenting on Welles' film itself. So let's begin there. Though it was nominated for 9 Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Director, Citizen Kane took home only a single prize, that of Best Original Screenplay. And the Oscar was shared by the skilled journeyman screenwriter and noted script doctor Herman J. Mankiewicz and the film's dashing 24-year-old director, Welles. Most everyone gave Welles most of the credit, including Welles himself, though noted film critic Pauline Kael, in a lengthy two-part 1971 New Yorker essay, titled Raising Kane, of all things, claimed that Mankiewicz deserved sole credit. Whatever the actual truth is, Fincher, working from a script written by his late father, Jack Fincher, falls fully in the Mankiewicz camp with his film Mank, which stars Gary Oldman as the screenwriter, Amanda Seyfried as Marion Davies, and British actor Tom Burke as Welles. It isn't enough, though, that the Finchers take side in the debate. Director Fincher attempts to recreate the magic of Citizen Kane itself in his use of black and white footage, in his film's sometimes frenetic tone, its use of exaggerated acting, offbeat camera angles, quick cuts, and various stylisms such as script notes and chronological explanations emblazoned across the screen. Not all of it works, including the screenplay, which has about as much to do with the real story as the HBO series The Crown does with the real British royal family. Plus, many of the references made and luminaries featured, such as Irving Thalberg, aren't readily recognizable to contemporary audiences. Who these days has even heard of the Algonquin Hotel crowd, much less its many brilliant members? Still, Oldman and Seyfried are talented actors, and Fincher, as he has proven in the past, can always come up with something interesting to look at, even if that something feels more like a gimmick than anything truly profound.
Well, this movie, Mank, was easily my most anticipated film of 2020, ever since Fincher announced it, ever since the, and that was about a year and some change ago, and then when the first stills came out and then the trailer came out, I've just been amped for this movie because I'm kind of a Citizen Kane geek. I guess that's sort of a basic thing to be because, of course, it's a great movie. But I'm obsessed with the lore surrounding this movie because there is so much and there have been entire films and documentaries made about the very thing that this movie is about in part. And I also, I love David Fincher. I mean, he's one of the great filmmakers working right now. And as you said, this is his first feature film in years. The last one was Gone Girl, even though he's kept himself busy in the television realm. It was exciting to see that he would be coming back again to feature films and with a movie about Citizen Kane. And it was going to be in black and white. So I was excited. And so I'm very sorry to say that I really did not like Mank. I thought this was just a crushing disappointment and a crushing bore. And for me to say that, I think, I mean, it's saying a lot because this movie should be right in my wheelhouse. It's all of my interests aligned. And I just thought this thing was so flat and kind of dead and hollow at the center. And granted, that's kind of like in the past, that's been one of Fincher's strengths, is that his movies are kind of cold to the touch. They have this sort of emotional distancing about them. And this movie doesn't have the same approach. I mean, if anything, it's sort of trying to humanize these historical figures that have either been sidelined or turned into caricatures, partly because of Citizen Kane. I mean, you look at Marion Davies, who is this vaudeville performer turned movie star, probably because of nepotism through her relationship with William Randolph Hearst. I mean, she's become something of a punchline because of Kane. I mean, the Susan Alexander character in that film, and we can talk more about that maybe in the second part of the show, is obviously a thinly veiled facsimile of Marion Davies. And kind of the great betrayal of Mank is that Mankiewicz himself was good friends with Marion Davies and then sort of wrote this very unflattering portrait of her. And any savvy moviegoer in 1941 would have known that's supposed to be Marion Davies. And so even when we get to that part of this script, which, as you said, Fincher's father wrote before he died, there's just no fire there. There's no real emotional catharsis. The whole thing just kind of feels, I don't know, like it never generates any sparks. And as for the historical element of this, I mean, it's dealing with lots of stuff that is kind of peripheral in the history of Kane, like the 1934 California gubernatorial race, where Upton Sinclair was the loser. And it also deals with fake newsreels that were created by MGM and Louis B. Mayer and all of this stuff. I mean, it's potentially interesting, but I don't think it ever really clicks together. It's sort of unfocused. And you know, we could talk too about the way this film treats Wells and you portray, you know, this idea of who wrote Citizen Kane. It has long been debunked, the idea that Mankiewicz deserves sole credit. I mean, it's crap. And I can't believe this movie is even still dealing with that. But I probably wouldn't have a problem with it if it was actually an enthralling film. So it's with a heavy heart that I say that this is a big thumbs down for me and probably my least favorite David Fincher film that isn't Alien 3, which is that one that he did that he disowned.
Well, there's always that. So
right.
Maybe you can be, so what were you hoping for here?
Well, I mean, I think I expected the film to be more about the making of Kane than it is. I'm not upset that it isn't really about that because the movie ends before, you know, a frame of film is shot of Kane. It's more about, you know, sort of all of the things that influenced what went into the eventual screenplay. But I sort of expected it to be, I don't know, about Mank. I never really got a sense of who this guy was or what drove him. I mean, he's married and has kids, I think, but I mean, they're sort of on the periphery of the story. I don't really understand why people were drawn to this guy or were perturbed by him. Gary Oldman's performance is sort of what you expect from Gary Oldman, but it just felt like he was going through the motions too. I don't know. About an hour into this movie, I thought, why am I not interested in this? Like all of this stuff is, I've read so much about all of these things. Why isn't this working? And it just feels like maybe like, I don't know, like a wax museum movie come to life.
I think, okay, now I think you're onto something because to me, it seemed as though Fincher was trying to simulate not Citizen Kane per se, but this sort of genre of, you know, storytelling that is removed, maybe to avoid things dealing with the censors and so forth and so on. But I thought it was purposely styled in that way. And so Mank, I guess, was less off-putting to me, maybe because I had no expectations going into it. I mean, I was very familiar, of course, with the Pauline Kael controversy and so forth and so on. And by the way, people, that maybe is how fake news gets started. Somebody with a modicum of credibility on a particular subject doesn't do
research, yes,
and you know, just writes beautifully and spews forth, you know, this dogma that turns out not to be true. So I guess I had different expectations going in. So I was actually in some ways pleasantly surprised by what I thought Fincher was trying to do here. But Nathan, I do agree with some of your comments about considering the whole notion of the film itself has, you know, a point of view. And then this doesn't really seem to have a point of view, Mank. Yes, it's focused on the title, the titular character. But as a practical matter, it really doesn't have, I'm saying point of view, you talked about center. So I agree there's something missing, but I'm not sure I can put my finger on it as easily.
Yeah, my main question about Mank is, who is the audience for this film? I'm thinking particularly one scene in the office of the screenwriters there at the studio, and we have all these luminaries from the Algonquin. We have Ben Hecht, you
Benchley.
Know. Yeah, and Mankiewicz was part of that crowd, both in New York, and he drew a lot of them out to Hollywood. And so we have His Girl Friday, the front page kind of scene in which they're going back and forth and they're throwing bon mots at each other. And it's all referencing, if you didn't know who these people were, you would go, what is going on here? And why should I even care? And you really have to know who these people are. Who was Ring Lardner? Who were the Hollywood 10? What was going to happen to all these people? Why did they leave New York? There's so much that's really interesting about the story that's left out, as you were pointing out, Nathan. And I think the main problem here is it's what happens when a very talented film director makes the movie he's wanted to make for years. We've seen it before. His dad wrote this screenplay. His dad died in 2003. So it's been 17 years that he's been trying to make this movie. And he finally makes it. And what do we have? We have something that doesn't really speak to anybody, that has a feel of Kane itself, has a feel of that kind of quick-talking 1930s kind of gum-chewing, wise-cracking film. That really, as both of you have pointed out, doesn't really have a point of view. The film, to me, was basically about why Mankiewicz wrote this movie, why he betrayed these people, and did he feel bad about what he did to Marion Davies? Because the best performance in this entire film is Amanda Seyfried as Marion Davies. There are really good things about it. You can't see a Fincher film without finding something you like. But I agree with both of you. There's just a lot left wanting about Mank.
Well, and I always like to see black and white films. And I thought that that choice was a good one. Again, mirroring what would have happened back in the day and so forth. But if we look at the portrayals, so we've mentioned a few of them already. What did you think about the secondary characters? I mean, so we're looking at a variety of secondary characters. That didn't save it for you in any way, Nathan?
Those are really good questions, Mary Pat, but let's deal with that in the second half of the show. We've been talking about Mank. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to continue our discussion of Citizen Kane, of Mank, and of David Fincher's career. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Hi, I'm Noelle King from NPR. After the year we've had, the prospect of a new year feels like both a relief and a daunting unknown. It might seem like a strange time to make New Year's resolutions when so much is in flux, but here at NPR, we're confident there's a resolution we can stick to. We'll bring you the news you need. Join us in this commitment by donating to this station now.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Mank, the newest film directed by David Fincher. If you'll recall, Mank, which was written by Fincher's late father, the screenwriter Jack Fincher, tells the story of the writing of the 1941 film Citizen Kane. Though officially the film won a single Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay, an award that was shared by Herman J. Mankiewicz and director Orson Welles, an ongoing debate has centered on the question of who the film's actual author was. In Mank, director Fincher makes a case that most, if not all, of the credit for the screenplay should go to Mankiewicz. But my reaction is basically simple. What difference does it make? Regardless of who hatched the idea or who put words on paper, it takes more than one person to make a movie. And Welles, along with the rest of his production crew, had the visual imagination to make it happen. And besides, there's so many good performances in this film that even if we didn't particularly care for the film overall, we couldn't not like certain parts of it.
Yeah, and when you're doing a biopic like Mank, part of the challenge is not only getting the right actors for the part, but the actors that look the part, that look like the original people. And so here, you know, the casting director did a great job because they've got Charles Dance as William Randolph Hearst himself. Just a brilliant casting idea, because we don't see Charles Dance, you know, in big parts all that often. So it's nice to see him here.
We don't see him really enough.
And then Arliss Howard as Louis B. Mayer, and I realized that with this, and I think it was a deliberate thing on Fincher's part, that Arliss Howard's version of Louis B. Mayer looks a lot like Mr. Bernstein from Citizen Kane, and I'm sure that was an intentional allusion. And then you have Tom Burke playing Orson Welles himself, and Orson Welles kind of haunts this movie because, I mean, he kind of floats in and out of it. He's not a major player in this because, as you said, the narrative of this film seems to be more that Mankiewicz, it's the Pauline Kael narrative that you mentioned, which, by the way, was espoused primarily by John Houseman, who's also a character in this film. And Houseman was Welles's kind of right-hand man in the Mercury Theater, a future Best Supporting Actor Oscar winner himself for The Paper Chase. Yeah. But Houseman contradicted himself all over the place in terms of who was the actual author of this. Sometimes he would say, well, Mankiewicz was the sole author. Sometimes he said Welles was the definitive author. Other times he said, no, it was 50-50.
And that reflects their relationship because they had an on and off relationship. Sure. They were close with the Mercury Theater. And then Houseman got fired. Then they, because that famous scene in Citizen Kane of Kane, after Susan Alexander leaves him and he smashes the room, was based upon a real scene in which Welles did that at age 24, leading to Houseman's leaving the Mercury Theater. So,
and don't get me wrong, I'm sure that Orson Welles was a real SOB to work with. I don't think anybody is stipulating that. And the rest of his career was sort of colored by that. But this idea that Mankiewicz is the sole writer of this screenplay has been disproven. I mean, there are people who have made careers out of basically writing about the writing of Citizen Kane.
Hey, and that's so what academia is all about.
Exactly. Thank God for academics, because it really is basically Welles and Mankiewicz came up with the idea together. It was inspired by elements from both
experiences,
of
yeah.
Well, but with Welles' life as well. I mean, there is kind of some unintentional autobiography going on in Citizen Kane that has been written about too. But also, they both wrote versions of the script that were then basically made into this finished product. And it was Welles who got Mankiewicz the screen credit in the first place. Right. So this narrative is tired. And again, going back to that question of who is Mank for? People that don't know anything about old Hollywood are going to be, as you said, saying, what's the point of this? Why should I care? And people that do are going to say, well, none of this is true. And the movie doesn't have enough of sort of like a fantastical kind of alternate history, like a once upon a time in Hollywood sort of vibe for that to work.
Okay, so I'm going to push back just a little. First of all, I do, because of who we're dealing with in Mank, I do think that the script is witty at various points. I also like the fact that I think Fincher made some decisions to showcase not only Marion Davies character, played by Amanda Seyfried, but also poor Sarah, Mank's wife. I really thought that Tuppence Middleton's portrayal of her was excellent because she had to walk this line of being poor Sarah and being a person in her own right. The character that I was a little bit more bothered by was the secretary played by Lily Collins, because I liked the idea of giving, again, female characters more screen time in a very male and masculine dominated industry, film, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm not sure that characterization quite worked in Mank.
You know, ultimately, what I want to do is I want to come back to the whole idea of this whole controversy. This is the kind of controversy that reputations are made from and that reputations are ruined by. And ultimately, it's nothing. This movie, as anyone who has ever been on a film set knows, there's the director, yes, but there's the cinematographer, there's the prop men, there's the people who do the sound. Ultimately, in post-production, there's the editor. All these people work to make a movie. You can't tell me that Herman J. Mankiewicz, go back in imdb.com and look at his resume. You can't tell me he had the imagination to do what Greg Tolan and what Orson Welles came up with. Besides, did he imagine Bernard Herrmann's music? Filmmaking is a team effort. And so it doesn't make any difference. They both came up with the idea. They both wrote parts of the screenplay.
They both won Oscars.
It's exactly. And it was Welles who oversaw what became one of the great movies that I've ever seen.
Well, and I want to say this about Citizen Kane, because I think we all rewatched it, you know, because of the re-release of Mank. Although I could rewatch Citizen Kane any day of the week. I mean, I think it's so much fun. It's one of those movies that, to speak to that team effort thing that you're talking about, it's one of those movies that I feel like if you decided to consciously pick one element of the film to pay attention to each time you watch it. So let's say this time when I'm watching it, I'm just going to pay attention to the performances and try and block everything out. This time, I'm just going to focus on Greg Toland's cinematography. This time, I'm just going to focus on the structure of the thing. Because
Focus on the makeup, though. That's my only advice.
Well, yeah, and I watched it in high def, and you can definitely see that. Mm-hmm. Although for the time, it's not bad.
No, I agree. For the time.
I think that if you... It's like an amusement park, this movie, because it has all these attractions. You can kind of pick which one you want to go to. And that's what makes it such an exhilarating film, is because even though it's about these antiquated notions of newspaper tycoons and all that stuff, it's so timeless. I mean, the fact that there's the scene in Citizen Kane where he loses the governor's race because of a personal scandal, and then orders all of his papers to print about, well, there must have been fraud at the polls.
Fraud at the polls, yes.
That sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
There's so much of Donald Trump in this movie, and I think we're just going to keep having Kane-like figures, you know, as long as that we're allowed to have figures like that, there will be Kane's among us.
One of the things that we were talking about here is the career of David Fincher. So quickly before we go, we can't leave people with a downer, because this guy, as you pointed out, Nathan, is one of the best filmmakers working today. So each of us real quickly talk about our favorite Fincher film. For mine, 1995, Seven. It's a hard choice, but I love Seven.
Can I cheat and give it a tie? I'm going to cheat anyway.
Yes.
It's between Zodiac, which I feel like I talk about on this show every week, and The Social Network, which probably not coincidentally has almost the exact same structure as Citizen Kane. It's a very similar film with lots of the same running themes.
It's hard for me to pick one. I actually like his TV work. And so I think from my perspective, you know, his music videos, his TV work, I think that takes precedence over any of his film work. Sorry.
Yeah, go check out his Vogue music video. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And that was the end of our discussion of David Fincher's film Mank, which is a study of the writing of the 1941 film Citizen Kane. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and I was joined, as always, by Nathan Weinbender and Mary Pat Truthart. Let's take this moment to thank another important member of our team, Peter Glarberg, who both produces and engineers the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that streaming cinema has to offer. Until then, remember these particularly apt words from the late Pauline Kael. Irresponsibility is part of the pleasure of all art. It is the part the schools cannot recognize. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.